to another episode of Fat Guys of the Movie Second Reel. We're going to be talking about one of the biggest movie franchises ever. I would say it's probably the most successful one simply for the number of films it has.
Probably one of my favorites of all time. Yeah.
I mean, you could say Star Wars is a very successful franchise because each movie was a massive hit, but there are only six of them now, soon to be more. But
now we got 23.
There's 23 official Eon Bond movies. We're doing a retrospective of James Bond, and I'm joined by Joe Bauer, who's a friend of mine from Columbus, who he actually used to work at the TV station where I used to do.
ABC 6, Fox 28, so we got to meet very early mornings.
That's right.
Like that, so. Been good friends ever since, and running each other in movie theaters and all that. So,
that's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Joe used to. What was your capacity?
When I first met you, I think I was doing floor directing and stuff. That's because I was on the floor with you. So yeah, I got a pretty good knowledge then.
Then you ended up in the booth and you're engineering.
I know. Seriously, then I just was like in a cave the rest of my time there. You know, before I had to finally escape and do my own thing. So.
I remember there was one time I was there and you called me into the. You're like, hey, send Kevin into the booth, and I'm on. And it looks like. Apollo 13, Mission Control with all the blinking lights and switches.
Yeah.
And you're there, master, and we're talking about, I think it was a Serbian film.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you were doing, and you kept, I'm wondering what's coming up.
You think it would like matter to me, but at that point, it was just kind of like, it's so second nature, so I can kind of like do things when I'm like, but I shouldn't be, you know? Yeah,
it's the oops that bothered me.
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh gosh, what did I just do?
Yeah. And then there was the one time I was on the, and you tested a Chiron. Or my title at the bottom. Do they still call those Chirons?
Yes.
Tested a Chiron, and because I made a comment about it, and this is relevant to the Bond discussion.
I remember this, yeah.
I remember, the name Pussy Galore, and then, of course, they made fun of it in Austin Powers as a lot of vagina.
Yeah.
I said, I want to be called penis all over the place.
Yes. that was your name key, yeah.
And you popped it in there, and I'm like, that's awesome.
I know. Yeah, we had to make sure not to have it anywhere near when we came back from break, but yeah.
that was almost as funny as the time that there was the crawl that goes under that goes beneath the news. I was sitting there reviewing one of the movies, and it said rapist arrested on blah blah blah, and the way it was written, it like took up the entire bottom. So when I was looking at it on TV later, because I was taping it and going to put it on YouTube, I was able to pause it so it looked like that was my title. It shows a picture of me, rapist arrested in Columbus or something like that.
Yeah, no, you're just talking about it. It's cool.
That's nice. Yeah. Or so I say.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of sexual indiscretion, let's get
right down to it, man. Yes.
Dive right into the Bond
like
movie.
A Pierce Brosnan film right at the very end. Yes.
That's right. Just sex.
Yes.
With no condoms, no consequences. Here's my question on the Bond films. How many little Bonds are running around?
Yeah, I know. Especially, I mean, I guess none from Timothy Dalton, since he really kind of got... screwed with the whole AIDS thing going on during the 80s time. But I think Roger Moore probably especially, he seemed to... because there was just like those little moments too, you know, like in like the 70s with Sean Connery as well, where I mean, they just like hinted that, I'll just bang this broad right here.
I'll just have sex right now, and then I'll get back to spying later.
It wasn't just the Bond girls then. It was just whoever.
Well, I do think though that since most of the people that Bond sleeps with end up getting killed.
Yeah.
There are probably few.
Yeah.
Few Bond children running around.
And this occurred to me actually when I was watching Casino Royale the other night. You know, like, because there's the whole torture ball breaking scene.
Mm-hmm.
And now if you put that in with the rest of them, if this really was the first, then he might have been infertile. He might not even, that might have been like his little thing, so he couldn't reproduce.
Could have crushed his
twin berries. So it might have actually been the case.
I think that's why they put that in there.
Yeah, because they probably had to like factor in. They're like, well, he should have like, you know,
5 million children.
Kids, so so if we give a reason.
Anyways, there's so many of these movies, 22 movies over 50 years, 23 now if you count Skyfall. We're really only be dealing with the 22 because Skyfall hasn't come out yet, and it may have, by the time I actually get around to posting this, it may have already come out.
Yeah.
But they just did the Bond 50 with all 22 films in the Blu-ray set. Yeah. Fuck you, Fox, for not sending it to me.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think I didn't get a copy of it.
Why is this?
Because Fox Entertainment's Twitter started following me when I did my Bondathon this summer. And they're like, well, we're not stupid. He just watched all these movies.
Yeah, he watched every single one of them.
Why
for a weekend, mind you. I had to point that out. I was blown away when I...
It was 6 days.
It was six days. Okay,
we did it over the 4th of July.
Yeah. Okay,
and we started... Yeah. I forget what day we started around the 4th, but we had a blackout in Columbus, and we got our power on like 2 days before it. So we were very lucky.
Yeah.
6 whole days, and the only real break we had was on a Saturday. I had to drive to Cleveland to see the new Ice Age movie.
Yeah.
And so my one of my sons and I drove up and saw that and came back home, and then we watched them all. But yeah, 6 days is 46 hours of movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a lot of movies.
Yeah, it is a lot.
That takes commitment.
Yes, it does. I was really impressed because I've watched them all now myself, but I've been going through them one night at a time, basically, you know, after I get the little kid to bed, you know, it's like, well, it's time for dad to go on down to the basement and then watch a little Bond film.
Go back to the man cave. Yeah. Well, but all of them, with the exception of Casino Royale and On Her Majesty's Secret Service, all of them are like between 120 and 132 minutes.
Yeah, right.
They're all almost exactly the same with Quantum of Solace is actually short. It's like 100.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's. Yeah.
But they're all over 2 hours. They're all slightly over 2 hours. So it was a lot. My kids and I watched it. We had a blast. It helps not having a regular job that I could do that.
Yeah,
we did it over 4th of July. My wife's a teacher, so she wasn't.
Yeah.
At school at that time, so we had a lot of freedom to do it this summer. Mm-hmm. So that was very good. So I watched all those, and it's I do that about every 10 years.
Yeah.
10 years ago, when Die Another Day came out, I watched all, at the time, 19 Bond movies leading up to it.
Yeah.
And I kind of did. I took a longer time to do it, and kind of did them out of order at times. But I still watched all of them, and it's a great thing to do because it really puts the whole franchise in perspective.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how many times I said, "Well, I'm going to watch all these," and then somebody would be like, "Well, you could just skip because you can just skip Quantum of Solace." I'm like, "Why would I watch 20?"
Yeah.
One movies.
Yeah.
And then skip the last one.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like the same case you always hear from everyone. But it's just, but it's the whole retrospective. I mean, not only do you have like the nostalgic factor of watching them again, you know, even when you haven't seen them again, but it's kind of cool just to see them kind of in that order, you know, because you just see like the balance that they had going on in between them, and, you know, and how things kind of changed over the years, you know, like they really do, you know, they really do have like their eras that are
absolutely
really kind of interesting. So,
it broke out that we did all the ones from the 70s in one day, and we did all the ones from the 80s in one day.
Oh, wow.
Which was an interesting way to do it. It really, really was, because you really got that. You really got the sense of the errors.
Yeah, especially in soundtrack too. By the way, my gosh, it's crazy how much they really change it up. Right when you get into like, I think, A Spy Who Loved Me, like it's just like they have like the keyboards and everything. Like they really kind of amp things up, which it's so silly now, but it just
For Your Eyes Only. Yeah, we'll talk about this in terms of some of the sequences that are our favorites. But in For Your Eyes Only, the pre-title credit sequence where he's taking out the Blofeld.
Yeah,
he's getting rid of the. The Bond theme that they play is all funkified and synthesized.
Oh, yeah, big time, yeah.
It sounds like Roger and Steve Smith from American Dad doing the soundtrack in the background. It's such a bizarre version, but in 1981, it was amazing and awesome. So. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the Bond eras, because that's how I like to look at it. Now, the people will say, what's your favorite Bond movie? And I'm like, there's 23 movies.
Yeah, right.
How do you choose the favorite one?
Yeah.
And even if you choose a favorite one, I usually look at it as more, to compare one of them from the 60s to one of them from the 90s or even Casino Royale in 2006. Yeah. I mean, you're talking, it's cinema has changed so much, and the way they tell stories and how they frame things and what they can and can't do and even what the franchise means, and sort of like if you look at like From Russia with Love, and that movie would never be made today because it was only the second Bond movie.
Yeah, right.
You know, and same thing with Goldfinger, and if you made a movie like, you couldn't make a movie like The World Is Not Enough back in 1965. You just couldn't.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's talk about the eras. Of course, the first era being Sean Connery.
Sean Connery, yes.
Who originated Bond.
Yep.
Was not the first choice. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. I found that out recently, actually, and just kind of going through them all. It's kind of funky to hear like how like Timothy Dalton and like names like that are actually being tossed around so early on.
Yeah, I think Timothy Dalton was originally
for George Lazenby, wasn't it?
For the first thing. It's conflicting reports. Roger Moore was supposedly tossed around.
That's right, yeah.
But he claims he wasn't approached, but he was doing The Saint at the time.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And of course, Ian Fleming's first choice was like Cary Grant or David Niven.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that he liked. David Niven was probably a little old, as was Cary Grant, because you're talking 1962 was when this came out. So they were kind of old for that, but they ended up getting Sean Connery and really kind of making him a star out of that. Of the movies he did, if you count Never Say Never Again, which I really don't.
Yeah, I don't either.
He did that that was more of a fuck you to the Broccolis.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, and it kind of comes off the way when you watch it now.
Yeah, it's, just, it's yeah. a remake of Thunderball.
Yeah, yeah.
And the inferior remake of Thunderball.
Yeah, yeah, big time.
So if you count just the Eon Bond films, he did six. Six?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, six.
Yeah, he did six.
Yeah.
Which would have been, which was Dr. No, From Russia with Love, Goldfinger, Thunderball, You Only Live Twice, and then he skipped one and Diamonds came back to forever. Do Diamonds Are Forever.
Yep, you got it.
For the record, yes, I'm aware George Lazenby did one. I'm lumping him into the
Yeah, he's going to be put into this, but we both have the same opinion on that guy.
Fuck George Lazenby.
Yeah, so it's just a...
Fuck him in the ass. I hate George Lazenby. Yeah. He is a lousy Bond. He's a terrible Bond. Yeah. He looked goofy. He was too boyish. He was a shitty actor.
What's amazing when you rewatch Honor Majesty's Secret Service, too, is, you know, like, he was obviously working on it, not only the awkwardness, but I mean, like, he was obviously working on the British accent because he is Australian. So, yeah. Like, he did have that going for it. But how much of his dialogue is delivered off screen, like, how they had to do an ADR afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, it, like, so many scenes, especially early on, you never even seen him talk. It's always, like, you know, the other person, like, reacting to what he's saying, and it's clearly voiced over. You know,
and they did a lot in that movie to remind everybody, no, this is the same character.
Yes,
it's not.
Yeah.
We're not. We just recast, and they actually talked about whether they talked about if you look at the thing because the timelines do not match up in this because Moneypenny gets older and older and older, but Sean Connery changes to Roger Moore and and back, and all that kind of stuff. They talked about what did Bond get facial reconstruction? That's what they were saying that happened to Lazenby. He's actually the youngest one who ever played Bond.
Okay, yeah,
and he also. Because in the opening sequence, they have all these shots from the other movies to be like, remember, this is the same guy who banged that one.
Yeah.
And then they have a scene in there where he goes into his office and he cleans out his desk and he's pulling out the Rosa Club shoe and whole bunch of things from previous films.
Yeah. Although they do have that line in the opening sequence, like, this never happened to the other fellow. Like, I mean, it's just like, it was like their set attempt to just try.
So bad. So awful. So that's about all I want to say about George Lazenby. I can't stand him.
I can talk about Our Majesty's Secret Service a little bit, but we'll wait for that because we should probably go right back to the Connerys.
Yeah, let's go back to Connerys. And Connery, he originated, he really kind of galvanized the character.
Yeah.
Even though his character is very different than what Ian Fleming wrote.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you kind of go by Ian Fleming, and not to jump ahead, but I mean, they do say that Timothy Dalton actually does have a very good resemblance of what the Ian Fleming character was.
Yeah.
But, it's kind of just watching Dr. No immediately, and I mean, that really is a classic movie. It's never not really one I always think about, like, that's, like, my all-time favorite or anything, but, like, that it's such a classic in the sense of how much Connery owns that role right from the start. I mean,
and it's a good movie.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a very good spy movie, and, like, they really... it's just it's got a cool little storyline going on for it, but I was amazed just not only just Dr. No, but the first three movies, how much Connery really owns that role. You know, it's he really is like one of the best.
He becomes Bond.
Yeah, it really is,
and he's the one to live up to. And if you compare it to another franchise that started in the '60s, which was the Pink Panther films, and whereas A Shot in the Dark was a bit of a, especially if you look back on it in comparison to the other Pink Panther films. Kind of just out there. It doesn't quite fit with the other ones. They hadn't gotten their footing yet, and it's not until they get to the second movie that they really figure out what the hell they're going to do.
Yeah.
And from Dr. No on, Bond was Bond.
Yeah.
And there's some stuff that changed, like the opening title sequence. They sexified it up a little bit later. So you have a couple things in there that aren't, you can tell, aren't quite there yet.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it is there.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is due just to how good Sean Connery was, because, I mean, you never had to reestablish who Bond was.
Yeah.
It was always Bond. I mean, like, because the Dr. No storyline, especially, like, the dragon and everything, was a bit kind of out there. I mean, not quite fantasy, but, like, I mean, it was just, like, on that verge right there, and they didn't know really what they wanted. But once I got into From Russia with Love, you know, like, I think the Connery era, too, especially, is definitely, like, the more serious and more, you know, it takes it to that vein of not getting campy in any way. It really it has its moments.
Connery
it has
gets
its moments.
Campy.
Yeah, it has its moments, but I think he...
not in the first two movies.
Yes.
But boy,
yeah, especially
does
not
get
From Rush With Love. But,
no, From Rush With Love is one of the most serious... That's actually my favorite Connery movie. What's your favorite
Connery?
Yeah,
that is my favorite Connery one. And the coolest thing, too, is, I mean, note that probably... That is, like, the first official opening sequence. That's an awesome opening sequence for a Bond film. I mean, for being the first, that's really right up there in, like, the top five of all time to me, like, of, like, the best opening sequences. It's
absolutely.
Very, very cool.
It's a great opening sequence, and it's got some great actors in it. You got Robert Shaw being a badass all over the place.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. He's great in that. And then this is where I think it starts to get a little campy with Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Goldfinger. And here's the thing. I don't consider Goldfinger one of my favorites.
No, I mean, well, as I said, From Russia with Love is my favorite, but it does kind of like set the plateau of like the things to come and like the kind of the era of, you know, like with the henchmen and like the
henchmen and, gadgets and stuff like
that. Yeah, like that. So, I mean, it definitely laid down the foundation, but no, I think it definitely, because of that, it's very well regarded, but I think you really have to go back and look at Dr. No and From Russia with Love, because those two, I think, are really on a level.
Goldfinger, the problem with Goldfinger is he's such a lousy spy in that. Yeah. He stumbles, he trips into all of his, his successes. In that, and he gets everybody killed that touches him.
Yeah,
he's a terrible spy, and it all precludes on the fact, spoiler alert, that he has sex with a lesbian and turns her into a heterosexual, falls in love with him, and that it is his penis that saves the day.
Yeah,
which I get it, sexual revolution, but all my life I've been like, really, seriously? That is the catch, that he just fucked a lesbian.
Yeah,
that is what he's like. Oh, I'm that good. I banged her in the. We had a roll in the hay, literally.
Yep.
So. But and then you got Thunderball, which I like Thunderball. Thunderball's good, but it's not my favorite.
Thunderball's the most interesting one to go back to, because I mean, when you talk about people that really, you know, have been with the Bond series from the start, that's like one of the most beloved in their minds. And I think, because I mean, that was like during like the Bond boom, so I think everyone really loved it. But now I find it pretty boring. I mean, because the underwater stuff today, you know, doesn't
hold up.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, and so I just, the soundtrack, is kind of like a very boring. It takes a while. It does not have, just does not hold your interest like the other three.
It plods a bit. Yeah. And then you got You Only Live Twice, which is a great Bond. It's actually it's my second favorite John Connery one, but it's so ridiculous at times.
Yeah, that laid the foundation for Austin Powers, I think. Yeah, for sure.
Well, it had the hollowed out volcano.
Yes, yeah.
And it also had Bond turning Japanese, which...
That is the weirdest part, because I didn't even remember that until I watched it again. And that part is very bizarre, you know?
It's not even... Yeah. It's so weird, it's not, like, even offensive.
Yeah.
It should be. For all rights, it should be ridiculously offensive, and it is.
Yeah.
But, I mean, him turning Japanese, they give him a shitty wig and put on some eyeliner.
Yeah.
That is Bond turning
Japanese.
Which
does very well disappear as, like, the finale is going on. I mean, he looks very much like Sean Connery by the end of that again. I'm just
when he
like,
first comes in to make love to his wife, he's like, okay, you look like a guy in a Japanese Halloween costume.
Yeah, exactly.
And he learns how to become a ninja in, like, a weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is so, so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that, I find, is such an enigma, even more than Goldfinger, in being... It's so bad in some respects, but it's also got some great elements.
Yeah, it does. It has some fantastic action scenes, but that has one of the silliest opening sequences, just because, I mean, you watch with your kids, so I can't even imagine like their reaction to the spaceship that's coming out that just like swallows the other one whole, and then the guy that's floated outside, so he gets floated into outer space. I'm just like, what is going on? Yeah.
Yeah. Predating 2001, thank you very much. Yeah. So there's that one, and then you have that awful Lazenby experiment.
Yeah.
Which the only thing that people that I can really give a nod to with the Lazenby movie is I thought Diana Rigg was so charming in it.
Yeah.
And she got suckered into the shittiest Bond on the planet.
Yeah, and that is true. That's probably one of the best things about Her Majesty's Secret Service is how great the Bond girl is. And I mean, she really was, you know, in a sense, I mean, for Bond, just because it was his wife, you know, it kind of matters. But the thing that's kind of interesting going right into that is they did have a storyline that kind of continued through the movies just a little bit, you know, Spectre and Blofeld going on. So Her Majesty's Secret Service is a very important movie in that regard, because it really is Bond really going after Blofeld.
It leads
into
the next
one. I mean, it's really kind of has like this real ground to it that should have been, had it been Connery, probably would have been like one of the most important ones of the series for him.
The other thing that I didn't like about Her Majesty's Secret Service is that it was stuck in such the sexual revolution.
Big time,
There's like a 30-minute diversion where he just bangs every woman in the mountain.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to rewatch, because I know a lot of people love it, and some of them consider it the very best Bond film. Mm. Not obviously not the best James Bond, but...
I've heard that said before.
Yeah, you know, and... I can't really call him wrong for the story element of it, but it really drags a lot. I mean, when you're rewatching it again, you know, Casino Royale holds up to its runtime very well, but Her Majesty's Secret Service, no, not so much.
Sort of reminds me what it's like to watch Mad Men.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, teehee, isn't it funny how funny people were? But you're sort of like almost laughing at the nostalgia.
Yeah.
You're like, dude, really want your hero to be like that?
Yeah.
I mean, you're like, do you really? Don Draper's really not that good of a guy, and James Bond is such an idiot in this movie, and he's like, and that's what he just goes there and has sex with. And I'm just like, okay, I get the whole fantasy element, and porno was really, you didn't have the internet back then, so that was your escape, but.
At least they had the skiing action scenes, because those are pretty sweet still. Yeah.
Then you have Diamonds Are Forever, which was terrible.
Yeah, when we're talking about campy Sean Connery, this is the one that I think of more. I mean, obviously there's You Only Live Twice, but Diamonds Are Forever is really, the two henchmen especially, I can't remember their names right off the bat.
Mr. Wint and Mr.
King. Yes, thank you, yes.
One of them played by Crispin Glover's dad.
Yeah. I did not know that. Wow.
I don't know which one's which.
But. Yeah. Yeah, they have like the Simon and Garfunkel look to them. I mean, that's what always kind of like threw me off when I was watching it. So.
Well, Diamonds Are Forever and Are Her Majesty's Secret Service are the only two Bond films that I actually rate unfavorably.
Oh, like, really? So consider, those are the two. Yeah.
I consider them both a bit of a chore to watch, and I don't really like them.
Yeah, I can see that. So,
let's move on to the next one, because there's a lot to talk about here. Let's talk about Roger Moore, who did his whole run from Live and Let Die all the way to A View to a Kill.
Yeah, the longest of the year. So,
yes. Yeah. Now, first of all, this is who I grew up with on Bond.
Yeah, same here.
And a lot of people, it's been said, your favorite Bond is, you're going to, well, maybe not your favorite Bond, you can grow old and look back and look at them all.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people out there who hate Roger Moore's Bond. I grew up with him. I love him as
Bond. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I mean, because, as you're saying, growing up, I do see the acclaim of Sean Connery. I do think he's probably the best. But if you're really talking about my favorite, my personal favorite, it's got to be Roger Moore. And, I mean, I was telling you before this, like, you know, when I watched A View to a Kill, that was my first one. I was, like, probably 5 or 6 years old. Like, the only movie I really watched at that age was, like, A Wizard of Oz. I watched that, like, probably hundreds of times. But my brother just, like, I got A View to a Kill. Let's watch this right now. And, from right then, even though that was his last and probably his worst, although I should say Moonraker, but I don't care like who you are. Like when you see like that opening scene of You to Kill, like with the snowboard and the skiing, and then you got the Duran Duran theme song, and then you got like the car chase in Paris where his car gets like blown in half, it blows your mind. I mean, I was sold immediately. So.
This is where the explosions got bigger.
Now
you gave a little dig at Moonraker. I personally love Moonraker. Moonraker was the very first Bond movie I ever saw. It's what I saw in the theater.
Okay, yeah. Then you can't. I mean, that's...
I love it. And the other thing that the Roger Moore era brought in was titties. Mm-hmm. Because you got those in the opening
side. Yeah, in the openings. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Which, some of them are pretty soft core.
They're pretty. They're out there. Yeah. And they air those on TV.
Yeah.
I don't know if they still do now. I don't know if they blurred those out.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if they do. I mean, because I guess like when they did air on TV, that probably wasn't as permissive. But when you're watching on Blu-ray, it's pretty. You're seeing quite a bit.
I taped both Moonraker and For Your Eyes Only off of television.
Yeah,
and the title sequences are uncensored.
Yeah,
like from the 80s, and that's great. I mean, to a preteen boy, that's amazing.
Yeah,
because I saw Moonraker and then For Your Eyes Only. And then you had Octopussy and A View to a Kill. So it did kind of go downhill.
Yeah.
But it was only later that I went back and watched like Live and Let Die and Neon with a Golden Gun. And we're going to kind of lump these together really quick.
Because you kind of have to with them. Because, I mean, Live and Let Die, I wasn't really a fan. But Neon with a Golden Gun, actually, that was the one that I probably went back and rewatched. I liked it a bit quite more than I thought I was. I mean, because it's got some weird spots to it, but really has a good henchman. A really, Christopher Lee is the villain with a third nipple.
That is his mutant power.
Yeah, that is the one thing you just have to remember when you watch The Man with the Golden Gun. It's just because it's shown to you right away. It's like the opening scene. Like, here's a third nipple. Boom.
Well, and the thing that's so neat about what's interesting about the Roger Moore era is it really did sort of galvanize the modern Bond and the explosions and the effects and the stunts. And they really put a lot of money into it. And back then what they do is they build things around a stunt. Like A View to a Kill, they were like, well, we're going to do the jumping off the Eiffel Tower and For Your Eyes Only, but they didn't get a chance to do it. So they moved it to, so they have these stunt pieces that they shoot around. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is my two favorites, I love For Your Eyes Only. I think it's a fantastic film.
Yeah.
It's well scripted. It's got a great story.
Yeah.
Bond is on his he's at his best because he's cheesy enough, he's cheeky enough, but he's not ridiculous that he gets an Octopussy and A View to a Kill. And also The Spy Who Loved Me. But like, for example, Your Eyes Only, it's got a lousy villain.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily have any great henchmen in it.
No, no.
It's Bond girl's pretty, but it's not. She's not terribly memorable.
Yeah,
memorable.
Yeah, not in a 4 year eyes only. And yeah. I actually hold the same too. Spy Who Loved Me, of course, for many reasons. And I think that's like the epitome of Bond films. Like, I mean, a lot of people for it is Goldfinger, but to me, like, maybe it is just my nostalgia for Roger Moore. But A Spy Who Loved Me, I think, is everything that's kind of right in a Bond film, because the gadgets are so cool. You know, that he's got a fantastic Bond girl, which we'll get back to. And I really like the, you know, that you got the Jaws as a henchman, and like everything about it was very cool. Introduction of Jaws. Yeah. But 4 year eyes only is my favorite Bond film of all time. As I was telling you before, it's just the action scenes are so fantastic. And it is kind of like the one time, like, where, I mean, even though Roger Moore's are really labeled campy, it almost kind of balances into like a more serious approach with Connery. So I mean, you do get to see like a bit more of the serious and more strict side of Roger Moore, and you know, so he really kind of blends it very well, especially coming right after Moonraker too, where it got like so over the top at that point.
Moonraker's goofy and silly, but I'll tell you, it's fantastic when you're drunk. I watch it with my kids, and
that was probably my mistake when I rewatched it.
They thought it was hilarious because I was drinking during Moonraker. I was really drinking during A View to a Kill.
Yeah,
and it was because they got the dumbest women in that movie.
Yeah.
And View to a Kill, especially, because A View to a Kill has Tanya Roberts, who's just a terrible actress. She's beautiful, but she's a terrible actress. Mm-hmm. And Grace Jones, who is the biggest what the fuck
It's the most bizarre one by far. Although Live and Let Die does have a few that I remember too, like the big Afro guy. I can't remember her name, but the one that goes like crazy, all like the signs, like the voodoo stuff, and she starts freaking out. But Grace Jones is the most bizarre, especially considering Roger Moore's age at the time.
Well, because he's really old, and then she's like really fit, but she's like growling at him. I'm watching that as a 13 year old in the theater, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? I feel so weird. I'm tingly inside, but I'm revolted at the same time. But Moonraker has Holly Goodhead in it, and she's the woman who plays Lois Childs is the worst actor. She is like the Kristen Stewart of Bond movies, because she's just like, oh look, Drax is shooting a weapon. I mean, that's like basically how she talks through the entire movie. And she's such a bad actress, but she's pretty.
Yeah.
There you go.
And they were really capitalizing on Jaws and Moonraker too, because they knew they had something great in Spy Who Loved Me. But now they try and make him a sidekick, at, you know, near the end and everything. Yeah. And so he's like talking to him. He's like, Jaws, can you take care of this for me? And Jaws just like Walrus.
He's like Darth Vader.
That's right.
He's
like, he gives the thumbs up. I forgot about that. Yeah.
The next era, which is a much shorter era, is the Timothy Dalton era.
Timothy Dalton. Which Living in Daylights is the first one I saw in theaters.
Yeah.
So I do actually kind of hold that to a higher regard, probably like you do Moonraker, because Living in Daylights probably wasn't one that like everyone really remembers so well. And it's a very, very serious. And as I was saying earlier with the 80s AIDS scare, it really kind of kept him away from the ladies a bit.
I remember hearing the news stories about that when that came out. Because, like, yeah, you're right. AIDS was full blown. It was 1987 when it came out. And they're like, well, we're going to make him a monogamous Bond. And the first thing he does is he bangs someone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like hinted, but like they don't let it even like jump into it. But
you don't show up in bed, but you know he's going to bag her. Yeah, yeah. She's in a bikini, and there's champagne, and he tells him, come here in another hour.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, and I thought Dalton did a fantastic job. He really proved himself in that movie. That's my favorite Dalton movie. Then he did License to Kill.
Mm-hmm. Which is very off the formula of Bond. It's a revenge film. I mean, it's straight up.
It's one of those that goes into going to, it goes personal. Mm-hmm. It gets personal with Bond because the bad guy played by, what's his name from Die Hard?
Yeah, let's see.
Totally drawn blank on him.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. I remember Benicio Del Toro
But the bad guys kill Felix Leiter's wife, played by Priscilla Barnes from Three's Company.
Mm-hmm.
And then they almost feed Felix Leiter to the sharks.
I didn't remember. When I watched it again, I'm like, wait, Felix lives with us? That sounds so
weird. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like one of the only times that Felix Leiter is played by the same character. Because he's been played by like six guys.
Yeah.
Because he keeps changing each time.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that Bond's hair, what the hell?
Yeah, seriously, that's right. Yeah,
Timothy Dalton, you have plenty of money. You need to get a better barber because your hair hasn't changed since The Living Dead or since The License to Kill.
He's not even brushing at this point. He's just kind of like panning to the side like I do. You know, it's just like boom.
Well, but looks like he's got the Wookiee hair. I mean, it's this weird thing that kind of hangs over
pretty
his
long,
ears.
Yeah.
So I've warmed up to License to Kill.
the thing that I think when I went back to License to Kill and rewatched it again, and this is just one of the things that I heard about Timothy Dalton, is he is an Ian Fleming nut. I mean, like, if all like the Bonds, it's not just about him being like the most James Bond of the novels. It's that he was crazy about the books too, and so like when he was on like set, he would actually have the books out and he would be, you know, pointing out to them where these things are, you know, how things should be done and everything like that. And so he really kind of plays up like the suffering Bond that it was actually seen in the books, you know, which was not quite an alcoholic, but I mean really isn't like this very loyal to Her Majesty's Secret Service, you know.
He's not as flippant.
No. He will go out and do his own thing. And I think that's why A License to Kill kind of works, is it really does kind of work to Timothy Dalton's character, because he is a very good Bond in the sense that it doesn't feel out of character for him to go out and get this revenge like you would think it would.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it kind of works better than you would expect.
Well, and one of the reasons that Dalton actually turned down the role of Bond when they got Roger Moore, and he did so because he thought he was too young, because he was like in his early 20s.
Yeah, well, he was also offered it during George Lazenby, too. Lazenby, I think, was the one he was offered it to. Yeah.
And he thought he was too young. And actually, that's true, because Bond should not be a 22-year-old. And that's actually part of the problem with Lazenby. Lazenby had too much of that baby face. You need to have a little more ruggedness to you.
Yeah.
And the thing with... The thing with Dalton is, ironically, as much of a fan as he was, he was there when they suddenly ran out of stories.
Yes,
when there
an Ian Fleming material left. Yeah,
they milked as much as they could. They didn't have any more titles left. They used like, I think A View to a Kill was based on a short story.
Yeah, the last James Bond story that they never used was because it was called James Bond in New York. That was like the last name. I mean, like, so pretty good reason why it was never actual
like
title.
Hercules. In New York. Well, and they did use parts, as I understand, they used parts from one of the stories for the License to Kill.
Yeah, and I think Octopussy did the same thing.
Yeah. So I mean, it works, but unfortunately, License to Kill did so poorly compared to the other stuff. And then there were some rights issues, as always keeps coming up here.
Yeah,
that killed the franchise for 6 years.
Yeah, and I mean, it seemed like it was going to be over at that time too. So. When GoldenEye was coming around, it was kind of a big deal.
And here we are, the Brosnan Age. Yes. Now, I'm curious. Yeah. What are your thoughts on the Brosnan Age?
The Brosnan Age is kind of a tougher one to get into, because leading up to it, I was so excited. I mean, and we all heard about Brosnan because there was all the talk that he was going to be Bond, but it was because of, you know, his negotiations.
He couldn't get out of the fourth season of
Remington Steel. Yeah.
And have you seen the fourth season, the fourth or the fifth season?
Yeah.
The last season of Remington Steel
is
fucking terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
It's awful.
And I mean, when you just look at Pierce Brosnan, I mean, this is like the guy that was meant to play James Bond at the time. I mean, he really looked the part very well.
And I remember when Remington Steel was on, people were like, oh, he's great for him. And they kept saying,
yeah,
we'll get him because Roger Moore's too old. And then when it was finally offered it to him, he just couldn't get out of his contract.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was like a long time coming. And I will give him GoldenEye because the time it took in between them, I didn't jump on the GoldenEye bandwagon as fast as some people did. Yeah. But I did end up seeing it probably three times in theaters. So, okay. I mean, I can't say I was running away from it either. So I did kind of warm up to him, but I think he got probably like the worst draw of the movies. And they got kind of progressively worse. I do think that The World Is Not Enough is a bit... is better than Tomorrow Never Dies, even though it's got Denise Richards, which is
terrible.
Yeah, Dr. Christmas Jones is awful. I mean, right when she comes in, it just like
there was something in the
movie.
Late 90s where they just casted pretty girls who you're just completely unbelievable as smart people.
Yeah, like, especially, I mean, because she had to be like this nuclear physicist.
She's like,
you know,
she's like,
so
hi,
yeah,
I'm a nuclear physicist. And if you listen to her talk, like, normally,
that's the most annoying part about
it. She is the dumbest woman on the planet.
Yeah.
And then, like, on top, like, around the same time, they did The Saint with Val Kilmer, ironically based on this TV show with Roger Moore.
Yeah.
And who played the nuclear physicist in that? Elizabeth
Shaw, that's right.
What? What's going on? Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah, Elizabeth Shue, you're right.
Noomi Rapace's character from Prometheus.
Yeah, very true. But no, and when I started ranking these movies, I remember Tomorrow Never Dies being probably one of my least favorites of them all. Now, when I rewatched it again, I did recall the first hour, it's actually pretty good. It's just like once it starts to introduce the invisible car and then the ice.
That's Die Another Day.
Die Another Day. I'm sorry. Yeah. Die Another Day is like the one where it just really kind of, I kind of remember it being like one of the worst ones, and I saw it in MGM theater, mind you, in LA. Yeah. So I had really high expectations, but at that point, it really seemed it was not Pierce Brosnan's fault, but the films were just getting so bad that they just had to do something. So I feel bad for Brosnan as an actor, because he technically is the only one that's gotten fired from being James Bond, because Casino Royale was originally going to be a Pierce Brosnan film, but they decided they needed to go another direction. Which...
Well, here's my thought on the Pierce Brosnan ones. I remember back in the 90s when they were in the early years of the Pierce Brosnan, everyone's like, Roger Moore was a terrible Bond. He was the worst Bond ever. He was too goofy, too campy, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You talk to people now and they're like, well, that was just the way the era was. That's how it was in the 80s and the 70s. And Roger Moore was actually pretty good. And I've noticed a big shift of that. And all the venom is being heaped onto the Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
I think the reason the Pierce Brosnan ones are reviled now, and I would say reviled is a good word, because most people, you talk to fans out there, quote-unquote fans, they hate them. It has more to do with the fact that they're very recent, but they weren't... But it's easier to be critical of something that's, you know, 10, 15 years old than it is to be critical of something that's 40 years old.
That's a good point, actually.
And I mean, I think in 20 years from now, when there's somebody else playing Bond or two more other people playing Bond, I think people will look back at the Brosnan era and be like, that's the 90s. It's as much the 90s as Roger Moore was the 80s.
Yeah. Well, you only had two movies on your list that you said that you even would rate below three stars, which none of them are Pierce Brosnan films.
Nope.
No, and I would almost agree with you, just despite Die Another Day. Tomorrow Never Dies, I had Michelle Yeoh and I had a couple cool action scenes, so I didn't hate it. I just thought it was definitely, you know,
kind of in that
weird plateau.
My favorite is that of his. My favorite's Die Another Day.
Just Die Another Day.
Yeah, and I know it's goofy, it's silly, it's over
it's
the
like
top.
A John
it's ridiculous.
Woo, John James Bond.
Yeah, but I'm like the invisible car was a bit much. Windsurfing an ice sheet was a bit much. But at that point, I'm kind of like, this is what they were doing then. This was very much that late 90s, early 2000s type film. And it was fun, and I thought that they integrated some of the gadgets a little bit better, like the ring that would make... He didn't just... What I always hated was when they said, here's a completely irrelevant gadget that you can't imagine any situation you can use it in, but it's going to save your life in the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
And that happened a lot with the Roger Moore era. And they did that a couple times, but that ring that he had, I thought they used that really, really cool. Yeah. I also thought that... Halle Berry made a good foil for James Bond, and they were talking about spinning her off. I thought it was fun. I thought it was it was what it was. And like World's Not Enough, I enjoyed. There's its problem, sure. Tomorrow Never Dies, I thought, just got a little too thick at times, and that was my other problem with GoldenEye. Was like they were trying to make it too serious. Like Bond, I think Brosnan could. He was best at playing the Roger Moore pretty boy Bond. And that's what I felt the Brosnan movies were a throwback to the Roger Moore days, because they had such trouble with the Dalton days.
Yeah.
And what the next era, being the Craig era, is a throwback to the Timothy Dalton and the Sean Connery days.
Yeah. An interesting thing, though, with the Pierce Brosnan ones is I would have to say the stunts. And, I mean, the first one in GoldenEye, of course, the bungee jump is fantastic, but... you know, in the Roger Moore era, you know, which they are probably the most implausible Bonds of all time, and they have the fakest moments. But, I mean, they really kind of work around the stunts in a way that, you know, they did a lot of, like, the cool stunts, you know, throughout them. Whereas in the Pierce Brosnan ones, they really got to the CG elements of it, and that is the 90s.
That's
part of the thing that I think, you know, when you mentioned the windsurfing scene in Die Another Day, or the... That's the big one, but also in GoldenEye, right after the bungee jump, when he jumps off the motorcycle onto the plane. You know, like, it had, like, its moments where, like, they were going, like, really, really out there with him, which I think, you know, just because they really went out and just did him, you know, they shot him and this is how it was, I think it just kind of, it might have been just a little too much for people, because you can't say they're more fake than the Roger Moore, so they're not at all.
Well, that's the thing, but I mean, watch the Roger Moore, it's all blue screen anyways.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all rear projection.
It's just because they really go after them in the Pierce Brosnan movies, and they really just try and do these crazy stunts, you know, and the fact that they had to CG them so much, they have like this weird, I can't enjoy them as much as I did the Roger Moore.
Well, and like I said, with my thing is in 20 years from now, people will look at that early CG.
Yeah.
Right now people look at it with revulsion because CG's gotten so much better, and they'd be like, well, that just looks terrible.
Yeah.
But it's like looking at like I just watched some of the Universal horror movies, and they're terrible special effects because they're made in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
Okay, they're terrible special effects, but you look at them now and they're 70 years old, and you're like, Well, there's sort of a warm fuzziness to those special effects. I think people 20 years from now are going to say that about...
not going to look back in the disdain of
They're
CGI
not going to be like, oh, that's so bad. It's just going to be like, well, that's the way the effects were back then.
Maybe that was part of the reason why when I revisited Die Another Day, that I actually didn't hate it like I thought I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, like, I remember the stunts just being like so over the top and so just silly that it kind of ruined it for me. But when I rewatched this last time, it really wasn't as bad. So I can't say I hated it. Like, I mean... You know, I hate to say that Moonraker was my least favorite because I know you have a...
That's okay. But, people hate on
Moonraker. Yeah, Moonraker, I think, is
defending Moonraker, you have no time for anything.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I mean, yeah, revisiting Pierce Brosnan era, he was dealt some pretty rough films, but looking back at him as the actor, he was a very good James
Bond. He was a great James Bond. Now, the next era we're going to talk... Excuse me. We're going to highlight real quick because it's Craig. And we're not going to talk about Skyfall because you haven't seen it. We're just talking real briefly about the next two. I always look at the Craig era as actually this is a side story in which M, played by Judi Dench, goes back in time.
Oh, wow. So this is deep here.
This is my... And basically changes history to have Bond show up now.
Yeah.
Because she is the only thing that stays the same between the set design, the directors, everything is different, yet.
But we have
there.
Her, yeah, yeah.
So I think it's like a Star Trek, like the Enterprise came and plucked her out and changed the world. The Borgs attack, and then the Borgs left, and James Bond just happened to be born 40 years later.
I think this would be like the next Bond movie. I think you're onto something there.
Because I think that has a lot. It's all about Judi Dench.
Yeah.
Which I always found funny because, I mean, she makes a great M.
Yeah, she really does. I mean, it was kind of like surprising when you saw it in GoldenEye, but I mean, now she made it her own right away. Yeah,
she's a great M. And when you say that's like, that's the thing we're going to keep.
Yeah.
We're going to keep her. Like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, that's awesome. She's great in the movie and she's good in the other ones, but.
Yeah.
But huh? Okay. Yeah. I liked it. I'm okay with the reboot. Hollywood's a little bit reboot happy now.
Yeah. Although since we never, we had GoldenEye before, but we didn't really have GoldenEye, and so
wasn't really a reboot.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Why did I say GoldenEye? I'm sorry. Casino Royale. We had Casino Royale before.
That
but
doesn't count.
Yeah. Exactly. It didn't.
That movie.
Yeah. It's
no
a completely
sense.
Different thing. And so Casino Royale was kind of. It was an awesome film to me. It was very traditional Bond in many ways. And, you know, a lot of people kind of compare Daniel Craig's films to, like, the Jason Bourne ones. But in Casino Royale, I think it actually works pretty well. Just because, you know, it kind of shows Bond early on, like, where he is kind of thuggish, where he really doesn't know what he's doing yet. And I think that works really well for it. So I really, really hold Casino Royale a very high regard. That really is one of my favorite Bond films of all time. Quantum of Solace, though... It's a hard film to actually... you know, License to Kill kind of went off the formula a little bit. But Quantum of Solace, I just didn't think did it right at all. And I mean, like, I was kind of... You know, it's sort of a continuation of the story to Casino Royale. But I really... They take the whole thuggish James Bond style with Daniel Craig to, you know, just too far of a plateau where I just... It's too much of a distraction to where I think the series should continue going, where I'm hoping it goes with Skyfall.
See, when I watched the two Craig films back to back, I didn't notice it being that jarring, and it also it helped being as I watched them like literally one right after. I mean, watched one, went to the bathroom, watched the other one.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's one of those movies that I think it works better as a two-part episode.
Yeah.
And I was okay. The only thing I don't like, and I'll say this. And not as this isn't a spoiler for Skyfall, but I want them to bring back the rifle sequence at the beginning.
Oh,
because they didn't. They changed it up a little bit with Casino Royale.
Yeah, right. It's kind of bizarre. Yeah,
and in Quantum of Solace, they throw it in at the end, right before the ending credits.
Yeah.
And they do the exact same thing in Skyfall. This has nothing to do with the plot, but they throw it in there. And I'm like, why? This is how every goddamn Bond movie is opened since 1962. Put it at the beginning. There's no reason it doesn't need to be there.
Yeah.
Because all you needed to do it, and then you open up, and the setup's the same kind of way. Yeah. You have that pre-credit action. And
yeah.
So I
Yeah.
That's the only thing I don't like. That's one of the things that stuck in my craw about, because the Quantum of Solace. But overall, I mean, had Bond girls. I mean, Gemma Arterton, she was beautiful. No,
she's a pretty good looking.
And I mean, Olga Kurylenko, yeah.
Yeah, man. He's had some pretty good Bond girls already. Daniel Craig's kind of
really creepy
that.
There.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'd like to sit on that face.
Yeah, but no, it's yeah. I mean, I like Quantum of Solace as a movie, but I just going back through them all, I think it just kind of sticks out a little bit more to me. But I can't complain too much, just because I think when you have Daniel Craig as James Bond, who I think, if I really was to name like the best, and excluding Roger Moore, who is my favorite, but if I'm to go with the best, it's Sean Connery, then right away is Daniel Craig. I think he's just done such a fantastic job immediately.
I think they were. But see, Sean, again, it goes back where I don't like to differentiate, because even that Sean Connery and Daniel Craig, Sean Connery is a product of the 60s.
Yeah.
And he worked great in the 60s. Mm-hmm. He didn't work so well in the 80s when he did Never Say Never Again, even though that wasn't kind of the same.
Yeah.
You know, so he worked for his era. Yeah. And I think Daniel Craig works for his era, as I thought Pierce Brosnan worked for his era.
Mm-hmm.
The only one I don't think worked for the era in which he was George Lazenby, because he was just terrible. Fuck you, George Lazenby. So I think I'll just call this show. Yeah. Fuck you, George Lazenby. So.
Yeah.
Anyways, we got to go to. We're going to take a break here, and then we're going to come back and talk about some of our favorite elements of the Bond film.
Meeting you with a view.
And welcome back to our Fat Guys Bond Retrospective. I'm Kevin Carr. I'm here with Joe Bauer.
Hello, hello.
You're talking Bond movies, and after that rather lengthy discussion of the different eras of James Bond.
Yeah, 22 films, yeah. It takes a while to go through. Yeah.
I mean, there's five people who played Bond. Well, six. Fuck Lazenby. six people have played Bond. So and they each did a bunch of films, except for fuck Lazenby.
Yep.
Anyways, we're going to talk a little bit about the Bond villains, who are favorite villains were in the Bond franchise. Now, just to kind of like nail it down, the villains were the mastermind behind everything, the person pulling the strings.
Yeah, and I mean, when you got Connery, you did have Blofeld throughout most of them, so it's kind of a, you know, he really had his moments in You Only Live Twice. But, you know what, I'm going to jump right up to the Brosnan era, though. Oh. Now, this villain was pretty wimpy in a sense, but I actually liked him a lot just because I love the concept of him. That was Robert Carlyle in The World Is Not Enough.
Really?
Yeah, because I really kind of dug the whole, you know, if you remember, he was shot in the head and he couldn't feel pain.
And the bullet kept moving.
Yeah, and the bullet kept moving, so he was going to eventually die. He had this very cool storyline to his character, and they did really play up the part that where he couldn't feel pain, you know, like, and how he kind of got around.
Yeah,
it did kind of stink when you just saw him around like the other characters, though, and you realized that Robert Carlyle is kind of a small little dude. But I thought he played it out very well. So I mean, when we're talking straight up villains, I really did actually in the Brosnan era, he really stuck out quite a bit, and that's why I actually kind of hold The World Is Not Enough above the other two, the Die Another Day and Tomorrow Never Dies.
Okay,
so, yeah,
okay, I'll but, give you that.
Yeah,
my absolute favorite Bond villain is Blofeld. The thing is, there's better Blofelds than others. Telly Savalas' Blofeld was just stupid.
Yeah.
And the guy from Rocky Horror Picture Show, whatever his name was, as Blofeld was a ridiculous thing as well in Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah.
I thought the best Blofeld there was the no-face Blofeld that they did.
In From Russia
with Love and Thunderball.
Yeah.
You never saw his face.
Yeah.
That made him very Emperor from Star Wars kind of thing, and that's I think what made him so ominous. That's him so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And then of course then Donald Pleasance did a good job when he took his turn as Blofeld and You Only Live Twice.
Yeah, yeah, he did. And he actually, I think that was the most screen time he actually had, I believe. Like
of really any good. Blofeld,
yeah,
I think.
Of all of them. Yeah, and there's a couple of big villains that you do have to just kind of name just because of the actors. Christopher Lee and the Man with the Golden Gun does quite a bit. Quite a good job. I had to mention the third nipple again, but also,
Christopher Lee and his third nipple scared the shit out of me as a child. Yeah. But before we finish talking about Donald Pleasant, I have to say he is the owner of the best anti-Bond line ever, which is "Kill Bond." just the best.
Yeah.
It just it's even better than, no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Yes. But also just jumping ahead right back into the Pierce Brosnan era, you can't not mention 006, Sean Bean.
Yes.
Yes, who is, I'm glad to see his career kind of coming back thanks to a little Game of Thrones. But, I mean, you know.
One does not just play a Bond villain.
Yes, yeah. I know. He didn't just play a Bond villain. He played the main character who had to get his head chopped off. But very good stuff. Yeah, so yeah. He did a great job as well. So, yeah.
I think, and what's funny is like in the Roger Moore era, mm-hmm. With he did the villains weren't terribly. I mean, Drax was probably the one I most remember from Moonraker. Mm. Oh, and you know, like, and that's when they got just weird.
Yeah, right. I mean, because Christopher Walken was the big name to play, but he was a pretty bad Bond. His big moment was just like shooting all these workers with a machine gun and laughing. I mean, that was the only part I really remember of his whole character. You know,
he was like
the product of Nazi steroids. Yeah,
yeah. He's a product of Nazi engineering and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The other thing that's so great about Blofeld is there's such a great story behind it. You know the whole story with Kevin McClory, mm-hmm. where Kevin McClory basically created Blofeld for Thunderball, and then Thunderball was delayed. And the villains in the books were Schmirsch, mm-hmm. and he created Spectre, which is a little more accessible.
Yeah,
in terms of, and a little cheesier. Because I mean, what does it say for the Society for something against torture, revenge, extortion? I'm like, what? I'd like to see the flyer.
Yeah, no, seriously, can we visit this website and stuff?
Yeah,
how do you sign up?
And it's spelled with an R E, so that's pretentious enough. Yeah. But anyways. The fact that McClory helped create Blofeld and then he became like the villain, and then when they went into suit mode and when he finally sued the Broccolis for the rights, and he got the rights to only remake Thunderball.
Yeah.
He actually tried to make a TV series of James Bond based on just Thunderball. And they couldn't get it done.
Wow.
And one of the other things I just love, it's just the ending of Blofeld is so great because for Your Eyes Only, it's this nameless, faceless, bald guy in a wheelchair with a furry white cat.
Yes, who gets picked up by a helicopter.
Who talks like this, Mr. Bond?
Yes.
And then they just like dump him down the shaft. Yeah. That's the Broccoli saying, screw you, Kevin McClory.
Yeah.
We can create other Bond villains. Yeah. But he's also the inspiration for Dr. Evil.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what makes him most important, too. Because, I mean, adds a great nostalgic factor to the Connerys, especially you only live twice. I mean, seriously, if you really haven't visited a lot of the Connery ones, you just have to go back and watch this one and then watch a couple of the Austin Powers just because they really nail it down so well.
So much of Austin Powers.
Yeah, just like even like all like the little people working in the volcano lair, you know, and just like how they, you know, they go about. They really have like their own little departments and everything.
Well, and the even for You Only Live Twice being such an inspiration for the Austin Powers, I mean, even like throwaway lines where in Japan, men comes first, women come second, and then, of course, the line that's added in Austin Powers, or not at all.
Yeah.
It's just so funny. Let's move on to the next freaky henchman, our best freaky henchman. Who is your favorite freaky henchman in the entire series?
I mean, if we're going to just talk about the most serious one, I mean, before it was really like became, before we really got the henchmans in like every one of them, Robert Shaw, I think, is probably the best one because the thing I love so much about From Russia with Love is just the tense scenes leading up to their big fight on like the train when they're really starting to talk. I mean, it's just. They're two people at the top of their professions that are trained to kill, and they are gonna have to, you know, bout heads. I love that scenes, and I mean, it's Robert Shaw just nailed it. It's so incredible.
What I love about From Russia with Love isn't just Shaw, and he's fantastic in it, but also Lada Lenya, I think is how you say her name, who played Rosa Klebb.
Yeah,
and she was a woman, but she was a henchman.
Yeah,
and she was brutal and vicious and just as deadly. Yeah. As Grant.
Oh, yeah. So with that knife in the shoe. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I like it. But if I have to choose one that's my favorite henchman, it's Richard Kiel as Jaws.
Yeah. Okay. I was hoping you would go there because, I mean, that's the one that I think of the most when I think henchman. You know, there's Odd Job, of course, but Jaws is the one that really. I mean,
Odd Job was, no to pun intended, he was kind of a throwaway character.
Yeah. You know, right. Just, yeah.
It was so bizarre, so weird.
Yeah.
That's his weapon of choice. Yeah. A hat.
Yeah. But I just love all the scenes with Kiel, like just like because he's so tall and just like how he has to lean down for so long to like go. Yeah. But I mean, they draw that out so much, so it's really goofy to watch now. But it's still like just like the metal mouth and everything. He really was just like kind of that icon henchman.
He has that anything, Darth Vader. Know? Arc, yeah. Where he becomes yeah. good, and which is funny because that was made before Empire and Jedi.
Yeah,
that was because Moonraker was after Star Wars a big hit. They said, "Well, let's fast track Moonraker because of space."
Yeah,
and he has the Darth Vader storyline before Darth Vader had the Darth Vader storyline.
Yeah,
and I love the part at the end where he actually speaks, and he has such a sort of a very very somber tone. As he talks.
They really give him a happy ending. I mean, yeah. They really do.
Yeah,
yeah.
But the other one I have to give a little bit of a nod to in terms of freaky henchmen is Famke Janssen.
Famke Janssen, yeah.
Xena on
a top. Yeah, yeah. The one thing that really kind of happens when you watch GoldenEye again is there's a lot of overacting in that movie, she does quite a bit of it herself. But that's a good way to die.
I would take that risk.
Yeah, yeah.
I would take that risk.
I mean, if I'm to die between a woman's legs.
If I'm going
to,
yeah.
Yeah, Famke Janssen would be, those on are top the legs. Would be a good way to go, yeah.
Those are the legs I wouldn't mind dying between.
Absolutely.
I could probably think of at least four or five ways that are really exciting to die between those legs.
Mm-hmm.
One of them would probably be just a heart attack. Because it's Famke Janssen in 1995. Yeah. So
at her peak.
Even now, I'd bang Famke Janssen now. Oh, my God. Yes. She's still... Yeah. I'd let her on the top of me.
Yes.
I do like her. And, I mean, and you lose the henchman. That's the one thing... As much as everyone just adores sort of the reboot of with Daniel Craig and Bond, and that is you miss the very colorful villains.
Yeah.
And even though in Skyfall... Javier Bardem does play that colorful villain.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not as just balls out ridiculous as Blofeld.
Yeah. Okay.
And you don't have that freaky crazy henchman.
Yeah.
And even though you have the return of Q, you don't have the crazy gadgets. So
I
miss that a little bit.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And I thought that was always fun.
Mm-hmm.
Even like Die Another Day.
Yeah.
The guy with the diamond encrusted face.
Yes.
That's kind of a cool end.
Yeah, he's a very cool look to him. Absolutely, yeah. That was the coolest part about him. Yeah.
So, and then the last one, we're talking people in this segment.
Okay, yes.
Let's talk about Bond girls.
Yes, let's talk about them. And I just had to pull up. This is my favorite. She's been that way for a very long time. And that is Major Anya Amasova, who is Mrs. Ringo Starr, Barbara Bach from The Spy Who Loved Me.
She's good in that.
Yeah, she really is. I mean, I think of the Roger Moore era, she's the one that definitely was the best. But it was just that dress that she's in throughout the majority of that movie.
And when she's not in the dress.
Yeah, even when she's not in that dress.
That
but
dress
I mean,
is
like,
kind of
nice,
too, when she's
taking
that shower.
Yeah, I mean, she's quite fantastic. I was immediately drawn, like, just beauty-wise, she's just... a complete knockout, but I thought she was she had a great storyline too, and that was kind of a cool thing. It's like in both The Spy Who Loved Me and For Russia or For Your Eyes Only, they really did have like the two Bond girls that had some really cool storylines, even though For Your Eyes Only one a little forgettable as, but Barbara Bach really stood out.
Well, the other thing with Barbara Bach is in The Spy Who Loved Me, it was 1977, which was kind of before you started seeing them say, let's actually give something for the women to do. They say they maybe take the woman along during the adventure in these movies, but she was an honest to God
spy.
She
is like the side character.
Equal.
Yeah, yeah.
She was his Russian equal. And that was cool.
Yeah.
So she's beautiful. She was wonderful. And I mean, there's the iconic ones. You got to love Honey Rider.
Yeah.
You got to love Ursula Andress as Honey Rider.
Yeah.
And you know, Pussy Galore. Honor Blackman is Pussy Galore.
Yeah, you just like to say that.
I just wish Pussy Galore was in more of it.
Yeah.
Because I think
and that's what's kind of weird, because she really does take a while to actually... Yeah, I
mean, she has like three scenes. Yeah. She shows up, she talks to him, she like takes him in to see Art Goldfinger.
Yeah.
They bang in a barn, and then she flies.
Yeah. And that's it, yeah.
Not much to it. So
the name will always stick, but...
still the best name.
Yeah, by far.
Of anyone. And I actually... I liked Halle Berry in Die Another Day.
She does pretty good, The one of the weird things that they did do with the Pierce Brosnan ones, and it happened a lot The World Is Not Enough, of like, you know, the whole Christmas lines, the ending with Halle Berry in Die Another Day leave it in if it's just perfectly, it's such a bizarre thing when you just like they're talking about diamonds, you know, in her belly button, so it doesn't it's so kind of bizarre. Like, I mean, they were trying like so
hard
to make it like sexual ending.
Well, part of the problem is they were doing PG-13, it was 2002, you could get away with a lot.
Yeah. Although that is the one Bond film that really has like a straight up sex scene in it between Pierce Brosnan and Halle Berry. But she's, you can't go wrong with Halle Berry. Yeah.
And there's other ones like, you know, Eva Green, I think, is great in Casino Royale.
Yeah, she really is. She did a great job.
And they had some great names. The other ones, ones to point out is, of course, Pussy Galore and Goldfinger. Yeah. You had Octopussy. I remember the trailer for Octopussy.
Yeah.
When they ask the girl, he's like, "What's that?" And she goes, "That's my little octopussy."
Yeah.
The audience erupted in laughter. This is for the trailer. Everyone laughed so hard.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Holly Goodhead from Moonhead.
Yes.
Terrible Bond girl.
Yes.
Fantastic name.
Yes.
But I mean, like Brink Stevens as, or no, Britt Elkin. Brick Elkin in Man with a Golden Gun.
Yeah.
She was Miss Goodnight.
Yeah, Miss Goodnight, yeah.
But you had like Maude Adams, who also played Moon, in Man with a Golden Gun, and she played in Octopussy. Same actress, yet not the same character. Amazing. Yeah. So.
Interesting. And on the top, of course. I mean, not to go back to Famke Janssen.
Let's have her in every Bond movie. Yeah. But then, of course, I kind of have to put up there as one of my favorites is Michelle Yeoh.
Tomorrow
Never Dies.
Yeah, that's... And she was absolutely gorgeous in that movie, too. Because I always just think of her as, like, Jackie Chan's sidekick, because, you know, with her and how much badass she can kick.
Yeah.
Tomorrow Never Dies, the first time I realized that she is a beautiful, beautiful...
Yeah, she was... Now she's gotten a little older, so she tends to play the mothers or something like that.
But
she still could kind of be the sexy...
Yeah.
Sexy woman in her 30s, early 40s.
Yeah.
The worst Bond girl. Who's the worst Bond girl?
I have to go with Grace Jones. I'm immediately with A View to a Kill. What the hell? Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't work. I mean, just Roger Moore as... I think they said he was 57 when he...
He was 60.
He was 60.
I believe he was 60.
Wow, he actually was 60.
Let me look that up.
Yeah, but I mean, I do remember in the trivia that it does mention that Grace Jones's mom is actually younger than Roger Moore. So that's how awkward that is. Ooh, yeah.
Creepy. All right, so he was born in 1927.
Yeah.
So he would have been, okay, you're right. It was
57.
Yeah, so 57. Close to 50.
Yeah,
close to 60.
I think I remember reading Grace Jones' mom was like 56 or 55. And that's,
Grace Jones is way up there.
Yeah.
I have to throw out Lois Childs as Holly Goodhead in Moonraker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She didn't even try to act.
Yeah.
She like goes, she's like, oh, James. And then Denise Richards.
Yeah, Denise Richards is just god awful.
What the hell?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not even fair. I mean, I don't even want to label her as a Bond girl just because it's just it's so bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Although I do love the I only thought Christmas comes once a year line at the very end. I thought that was a pretty good one.
I don't know. Yeah. To me, that was them also trying to be.
Yeah, they're trying to be.
That was almost too cheeky. Yeah. I know a lot of people love that line. I'm just like, that's like.
It would have worked a lot better if they didn't have like the, I never thought I'd have Christmas in Turkey. You know, like because he had like three of them right before they even got to that one.
So, well, and I think if that would have been in like 1983 instead of 1999,
it
would have been much better because it would have gotten past the censors because they wouldn't know what it meant.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then there's a dishonorable mention. I have to say Kim Basinger, even though we're not talking much about Never Say Never Again, she was terrible as Domino.
Okay. I'll take your word for it because I really just don't want to revisit Never Say Never Again.
It's not good. Yeah. It's not a good movie. James Bond takes somebody out with his urine sample.
Yeah. I do recall that was the one part that I do remember from that movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's not good. All right. Yep. Anyways, we're going to go take another break and then when we come back. We're going to talk final elements of the Bond films.
Absolutely.
And here we are. We're going to be talking a little bit more about the Bond films. I'm here with Joe Bauer.
Yep.
We are going to be now talking about our favorite elements of the Bond film. These are like what I consider sort of like the...
You've got to have in every Bond film.
So the first one is our favorite pre-title sequence.
Pre-title sequence? If I have to just name one, GoldenEye is my favorite one.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, even though it gets very over the top at the very end, I love the introduction of Pierce Brosnan. The bungee jump is really cool, and I just found it to be it's a very tense scene, you know, like how he's just going through everything. I really liked it, and it does help the way he has Sean Bean working with him, who you think gets his head blown off, you know.
Oh, but,
Spoiler
alert.
Yeah, but it turns out not to be. But it's been almost 20 years, people. Gonai is very, very cool. And but there's quite a few in the Roger Moore era.
There's a lot of them. The one I'm picking is from Roger Moore. And it's again, one of the reasons why I love Moonraker.
Mm-hmm.
The opening of Moonraker.
Yeah, Moonraker, yeah.
The parachute jump, they did 88 parachute jumps to film that.
Really?
And it's 2.5 minutes in free fall. Yeah. Now, they do have a couple of rear projection shots of
Roger Moore. But that's a great one, yeah.
Which is clear. But, I mean... Yeah. This was done before computer-generated effects.
Mm.
They had, if you want to shoot people jumping out of airplanes, and that's what you got to do. It's a fantastic opening scene. It's amazing. I really think it's an amazing thing.
Yeah, so. And we do have the one that we've mentioned already a couple of times, For Your Eyes Only, with the helicopter catching Blofeld, which is a good one. And I did like the octopusy one quite a bit too, because it kind of similarly, like with Tomorrow Never Dies, it has like a very similar one because they're both like with the planes, you know, trying to escape missiles and use them. But I really dug it in Octopussy. I thought that was a very cool little opening as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I also give a little bit of a nod to Die Another Day.
Yeah.
Because I like
Die Another
ones,
Day is a very cool.
Even though opening, I love the Moonraker parachute scene, it has no bearing on the rest of the film.
Yeah, right.
I like when they have something that leads into the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Octopussy was like that. Die Another Day is that. That's when he actually gets... And what I loved about it was I'm like, well, shit, he got captured.
Yeah.
And we go to
Then
credits.
You go right to that pre-credits scenes. Yeah, which is very cool.
Which is awesome.
But but we cannot not mention, once again, From Russia with Love, because that was just with the Robert Shaw and the James Bond.
Killing Bond.
Yeah, that was just a very...
Kill Bond!
You're just like, what? Yeah, very cool scene.
You know, I wrote an article for Film School Rejects this week, and where I broke down the Skyfall trailer.
Yeah.
And I just did it from the trailer, not from the movie, but I said, I took 10 elements from it that I said, these are 10 things that have been done before.
Yeah.
The death of Bond.
Mm-hmm.
You see him die? He was killed, and you think he got killed in that opening sequence of
And you only live twice,
And you only live twice. There was also at the beginning of Thunderball, they pan over to a funeral, and it says JB on the side of. You quickly reveal it wasn't him. That was one of the ones. I also did one. Like I said, it's not the first time he's broken into M's apartment.
Yeah.
It's not the first time he had to get retrained.
Yeah.
It's not the first time it's a personal vendetta. So I'm just like picking apart all the key elements that are played out.
So you decided you hated the Raven.
No. I like it. In the title of the article, I don't know if it got preserved when it got published, but because we're recording this before it actually is going live. But I basically said, here's 10 ways that Skyfall... copies other Bond movies, but that's totally okay.
Yeah. I mean, they all copy each other.
And that's what's good. If it's too different, it's not a Bond film.
Yeah, so. Right.
Yeah, and of course, you mentioned the ski chase. I did. Even though I hate George Lazenby, I got to give a little bit of, that he does do a little bit of the nod.
Yeah.
Of at least acknowledging he's not Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Yes, because you suck.
Just since we don't have to come back to George Lazenby, I'm going to jump into the next subject with you. With Lazenby, favorite theme song? It's not my favorite, but it's my second favorite, and that's Honor, Majesty, Secret Service. If they want to redo one of the theme songs ever again, the Honor, Majesty, Secret Service theme music, because it's not a song, but the dun-dun. Yeah, I love that music. And that's one of the reasons why I actually... did enjoy Honor, Majesty, Secret Service because it has such cool music going on in it. So
I have a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for when they actually have the title of the song.
Mm-hmm.
It actually says the name of that's the title of the movie.
Yeah.
And so I kind of like that. And so whenever they don't do it, I'm kind of like, for example, it's my all-time high from Octopussy.
Yeah.
Never says Octopussy. Of course, I think a song called Octopussy would have been
really
so
that,
awesome.
Yeah, but that would be sweet, yeah.
Would have never been played on the radio, though.
Get Casey and the Sunshine Band or something to do it, you know? That's what I always thought of, like, when I heard Octopussy. I'm like, what song is this?
See, the ones I think I have, even though I'm not a big fan of Shirley Bassey, I think she exemplifies a Bond.
Theme. Absolutely, yeah.
And she did a bunch. She did Goldfinger, and she did Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah.
And she did another one.
Nobody Does It Better?
I don't recall. No. I don't think that's...
Okay, I can't recall who did that. That's a great one.
That's from The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah, I can't recall who.
Why am I thinking that's Nancy Sinatra? Is that Nancy Sinatra?
No, Nancy Sinatra was You Only Live Twice, actually. So.
Oh, is that her? Did Only
Live
Twice?
Yeah. But my favorite one actually is Duran Duran, A View to a Kill. And it was the first Bond film I saw, but I love it. I think they are great. And Yeah, they were fantastic.
So, yeah, Duran, and then of course you had Aha.
Yeah.
Doing the Living Daylights.
Yeah. So
those are great ones. I give those, but I also my favorite ones. I love Goldfinger by Shirley Bassey, and that's part of why in this getting it a little tease for Skyfall. Mm-hmm. Adele's Skyfall trailer, a song I thought was so. Had such the feel of that 60s Shirley Bassey.
Yeah, throwing. I mean, I can just tell that just from hearing on the radio. Yeah.
It really, really works. Mm-hmm. But I also loved Live and Let Die by Wings because it was so out there as a Bond theme.
Yeah.
It does not feel like a Bond theme.
No, it doesn't, but it's quite cool.
It's just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And then For Your Eyes Only by Sheena Easton, partly because titties.
Yeah.
And it's interesting is that's the first time Sheena Easton, that was the first time any singer appeared in the pre-title
sequence. That's right, because that was the one thing that is kind of a little dry when you see it, but that is true. Now, I mean, with the opening credits alone, not so much the song, but I did love the opening credits themselves of Casino Royale. I thought that was a very cool, with the gun, shooting off the hearts and the spades and like all the cards and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a very, very cool little introduction to it. So
It was Rita Coolidge who did
Rita
All
Coolidge.
Time High.
Okay, yeah.
So, I like those. I also, I have to give a little bit of a dishonorable mention to Thunderball by Tom Jones. Because men do the songs. They've done the songs. They've done Live and Let Die. They've done A View to a Kill.
Yeah.
The Living Daylights.
Yeah.
Jack White did Too Good.
Yeah, Quantum of Solace. Yeah, Felicia Keys, yeah.
But Thunderball, he was basically doing Shirley Bassey.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work with Tom. Yeah, it's just terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this other dishonorable mention is Madonna. Fuck Madonna.
Yeah, that is a terrible one.
Fuck Madonna with George Lazenby.
Yeah, I would say that's because the Quantum of Solace one was bad, but the Madonna one is just terrible.
The problem with the Quantum of Solace one's forgettable. I couldn't hum it for you if I wanted to.
Right.
I cannot get that goddamn earworm of Die Another Day out of my head.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. So bad. You almost had me sing it on the podcast.
Oh, so bad. Yeah. Fuck Madonna. Yeah. Fuck Madonna with a little George Lazenby statue is what I say.
Yeah.
And now let's move on to the next, our favorite stunts.
Favorite stunts.
Yeah.
There's a couple that stick out right away, and that one I have to give complete love to is the one in The Man with the Golden Gun.
That's my
spiral jump with the car, which is just awesome.
That's the first stunt ever to be planned and calculated by computer.
Yeah, and it had to. I mean, it had to be perfect. Yeah, it was. It's just been that. It just looks so good. They did it so well.
And the only problem with it is they use a slide whistle.
We're talking about that too. With Octopus, when he's going on the vines, and you got the Tarzan. Which is just
the pigeon that does the double take in Moonraker.
Yeah.
Huh? it was very cheeky, but you're right. The Man with the Golden Gun, the car flip was amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Which is a bit of a nod to was it Golden? Or was it Goldfinger or From Russia with Love where they roll the
that was actually Diamonds Are Forever.
Was it Diamonds Are Forever?
Yeah, when he was in Vegas and he was running out because it's weird how that car chase starts because they're in the middle of the desert, but then the car chase starts. They just get to Vegas. And then boom, car chase starts up. But yeah, I mean, given that's kind of how Nevada does work.
It's like desert, Sin City.
Yeah, it looks like it's like bright, afternoon, but then just like, at 2 a.m, they get in this big car chase. But that's right.
If it works for the Dark Knight Rises, it goes under the tunnel and it's bright daylight at 5 o'clock when the stock market closes, comes out the other side of the tunnel,
we'll give
pitch
this
black.
One. Yeah, we'll give this one, yeah.
How long was that goddamn tunnel?
Yeah.
That's what I have to say.
Yeah.
The other one I have to give a little bit of a nod to is there's the helicopter chase in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's reason I like that is because it was one of the few fantastic uses of computer generated effects.
Yeah.
Because what they did is they put the helicopter, it's the one where the helicopter leans forward and it cuts through the
street.
And they're trying to get through. What they did is they put the helicopter on a jib arm and so it's moving towards them, but they didn't have the blades.
Yeah.
And they had things just blowing up on the sides, and they added the blades later.
Yeah.
It's one of the few computer-generated stunt shots in any Pierce Brosnan movie that actually looks authentic.
Yeah, yeah, it really does. That is a very cool chase scene too. Yeah, that whole part is awesome.
Yeah.
Very,
and then the other one is there's a shot in, it's not really a stunt, it's sort of an accidental stunt.
Mm.
There's a shot in Thunderball where Sean Connery's going under into the pool and he's trying to get in and the sharks come out.
Yeah.
And they release the sharks. And they did it, what they did is to get the shot of the shark swimming in front of Connery.
Yeah.
They just put a piece of glass there.
Yeah.
Well, there was a mix-up where they either removed the glass or they didn't know another shark was in there. And so this shark literally just comes right in front of Connery. And you see him react. Yeah. And that's not him acting as James Bond.
He's just like, I'm about to get eaten.
That's a genuine, oh, fuck Sean Connery response. the last one we're gonna wrap this up here with our best gadget. What's your best favorite gadget?
Best gadget isn't the Spy Who Loved Me. It's kind of cheating because it's the car, but the car is so cool. I mean, yeah, the car just takes the show in The Spy Who Loved Me. That's the Lotus E-Spear. It's the one that can go underwater and activate as a submarine.
Yeah,
because I can only think of how much use I can get out of that, because I'm not a scuba diver.
We live in Ohio.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, you hear
you don't
about,
have
like,
to, you won't be stuck on a bridge going across the Scioto River or something.
Yeah, just anything like that. But I mean, just, you know, when you hear about people like, you know, going scuba diving, like these little cool little places, like, yeah, I did that in my car, you know. It's just I had a little drive through.
I have a feeling James Cameron owns one of those.
Yeah, he probably does. That's probably how he got all started with everything, you know. So yeah, no, I loved that car. It was a very cool looking car.
Well, if we're talking cars, I got to give a lot of love to the Goldfinger Aston Martin too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's so 60s. Because it's so solid state technology now.
Yeah.
I mean, now, you know, if you look at like the new ones, even the ones in the 80s and 90s, they had all the dials and the computers and little buttons. This one has, you know, just these big balk light switches that you have to switch and pull, but it still works.
Yeah.
It's a great car.
Yeah. Living Daylights had another, like, a little fun one that I could just see getting good use of, like the little whistle that would break out some tear gas, or it could even use an exploder.
Oh, the watch, and it, the wolf whistle, it blows up.
Yeah, I mean, if you just like kind of hand that to somebody sometime, just to kind of mess with them, and they just think it's funny. You don't really like them, then you just knock them with some tear gas. Yeah.
Wasn't that Joe Don Baker? And did he get busted with that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah.
Mitchell.
Yeah.
I have to say, my favorite gadget of all, it's so low rent, it's Rosa Klebb's shoe in From Russia with Love.
Yeah, it's fair enough, though. That's pretty badass.
Works. It's simple and it works. Poison tip knife. But there's also his all the watches that Roger Moore had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From tracking devices and Octopussy, he had two-way radio.
He had the Magna and Live and Let Die.
And he unzipped women's dresses with that. That's awesome.
He made it really work. I mean, I wasn't really getting the whole fork part, you know, but when he did the dress.
And then finally, of course, I have to give another shout out to the ring from Die Another Day. And the reason I liked it is because there's so many of these have just like these narrow one-time uses. That it's like, and the best example is, the best example of a shitty gadget was the wrist darts that Roger Moore gets in Moonraker.
Yeah.
Where you have Q like, oh, you put this huge clunky thing on your wrist and no one will notice it through the entire movie, even though you change your clothes and you're captured by the bad guy. You dive into water and wrestle a snake, and you're still gonna have this thing that we never see until the very end. He's like, I have this.
Bing.
Yeah. but I love the ring, because it was used on different things.
It was used very well, too. Yeah. I mean, even just like the way he escaped when he had the glass underneath him, that was just a, you know, it's like just a really cool, you know, way. It did not feel like I was cheated, as you were mentioning earlier. Yeah. You know, it felt that it was actually.
He has that. He has that gadget. Yeah. He can use it. So
yeah.
That's the one. That's again one of the things that I as much as I like the Daniel Craig movies, and even in Skyfall, even though they've brought in a Q.
Yeah.
He's not bringing up with these gadgets. I always loved visiting Q Branch.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why I loved Die Another Day. Because even though Desmond Llewellyn had died and had passed the reins over to John Cleese, when he goes to Q Branch, you see the alligator, you see the scuba suit,
that is one of the best parts of it,
You see, it's such a fantastic sort of retrospective of all the gadgets. But I love, like, in Octopussy, when he's out there and he's got the guy going up a rope, climbing up a rope.
Yeah, that's the best thing about the Q's lair, though, too. I mean, I love the one with the bagpipes. Yeah. You remember that? That was a great one. And then just the most bizarre one, like when the guy goes into the payphone and just this giant airbag
just
like shoots up and just like has a guy locked in there. It's so fantastic.
That's what I miss. I miss that about Q Branch and a little bit of talk on Skyfall, even though you got Ben Wheatley playing. It's Ben Wheatley. Is that his name?
I think so. Yeah. The guy from Cloud Atlas.
Yeah. He's playing Q and he's good as a Q. It's still, he's like, I want to see him have the, he's like, oh, just a palm print gun. That's it. That's from Judge Dredd for Christ's sake. You know, they've done that. No, give me the, you know, have him do the thing that shoots like live snakes at your bad guys. It's completely impractical, but it's so awesome.
Yeah.
I want a gun that shoots live snakes.
Yeah, it's a good one. That should be in the next Bond film. I mean, you have to figure with another Q that they will. That's what's coming in the next.
I think that is what's coming. I think the whole overly realistic personal life of Bond. You can only do that for so many.
Yeah, and I think
you can only have shit gets real.
Yeah.
Like two or three times in a Bond's career.
Yeah, and we're starting to head that direction where it's going to kind of get back to that.
It's going to get a little. It's going to get. Yeah. It's going to get into. I'd like to see it return to the. Because right now we're in the with these Craig movies, we're in the Dr. No and From Russia with Love era. Yeah. I want to see him go into the Goldfinger and Thunderball.
Yeah,
even though those aren't my favorite movies, I want to see him kind of go back to that.
Yeah,
a little bit of silliness is fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which hopefully we'll get to those pretty soon. But
anyways, well, if you're wanting to hear about Skyfall, sorry we didn't talk about it much here.
Yeah.
You can listen to this week's Fat Guys of the Movies. You can check out my movie review. You can get it on the site, Fat Guys of the Movies, or up on iTunes. Joe, thank you for
absolutely, and I can't wait to catch Skyfall myself.
Absolutely. So, do you want to give a little bit of a shout out to where people can find you on Twitter or Facebook?
Yeah. You can find me on Facebook, Joe Bauer, house address. Bauer. But I am found on Twitter as well, Jay Bauer, Bauer, Prod. I'm a photographer.
Do you follow me on Twitter?
I think I do follow you on Twitter, yeah, so I do get some of your updates as well.
Do you do much tweeting?
I don't. No, because mostly from my Twitter. Like, I like to follow people, but for the most part, I kind of have to keep it a little bit business because that is my business account. So, yes, that one is a little bit more. I was thinking of opening.
Fortunately, I can talk about tits and ass.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have that luxury, you know. Yeah.
My wife's a teacher.
Yeah.
So it's funny. I'll be drinking, and I'll be like, I'm totally going to go after that car 819 tonight.
Yeah.
She's like, that's my people I know. I don't like work with me. Yeah. And I'm just like, hey, we're married.
Yeah. Fantastic. All right. This is great. Thank you so much for having me here, man.
Lots of fun.
Yeah. All
right. Well, we will talk to you guys later.
Bye-bye.